If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you very much, Tim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 10 minutes after 12 on a Tuesday afternoon. Beautiful spring day in Chicago. The tulips along Michigan Avenue are magnificent, and so is John Najarian. He joins us on most Tuesdays. John, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, you're the magnificent one, Stephen, but thanks for having me back.
Well, the Dow's not doing so magnificently today. Now it's down about, I think, 150 points, which is off its lows, but people are blaming this on manufacturing out of China. Is that your account as well?
Yeah. Manufacturing out of China, the same concerns that were voiced last week by Carl Icahn, which really got the markets nervous, in particular about Apple, when Mr. Icahn mentioned that he'd sold his entire stake, which he famously bought very shrewdly. I don't think he sold it quite as shrewdly, but nonetheless, being out of it before it hit the new lows for the year was a good thing for him, but it's bounced at those lows. So, yes, you're right. Manufacturing out of China, the 2% sell-off in crude, we can occasionally disconnect a little from that relationship. That is, crude oil goes down, market generally goes down, but we don't disconnect for long, and a 2% sell-off in crude, in particular, coming with Iran bringing more onto the market every day, that's not good for crude.
Well, you mentioned, I think, Apple's bounce, right? They set their longest losing streak yesterday since 1998, but the stock is up today?
Yeah, and it was, as of just a little bit ago, holding on to a little bit more than a dollar worth of rally, almost $2 off the lows that it put in. And again, those lows go back to the August lows of last year on that flash sell-off that had that dramatic turnaround in the broad market. Same thing about the February lows. So if that level holds, I think you'll see people getting bolder about getting back into that stock.
Now, Tim Cook was on with Jim Cramer. Yeah, on Mad Money on CNBC. And everyone's talking about that, you know, that he doesn't do a lot of these shows. I think the last time he was on that one was, what, more than a year ago, 13 months ago or so. And he was saying, hey, you know, we had $10 billion in profit last quarter. Things aren't as bad as people are making it out to be.
Well, and I tend to agree with him, with Tim Cook, especially down here when you're looking at a stock, like you say, $10 billion in a quarter, and sales north of $40 billion in that same quarter, and now you've got a new device coming our way in September. Virtually all of us think the iPhone 7 makes this September introduction, probably at the Moscone Center in San Francisco, and then it gets offered to the rest of us about a month later. I think that's going to drive sales like crazy. I don't think the upgrade cycle is over, so I think Apple is definitely a buy on these dips.
Can you give me an iPhone 7 early? Can you have that much pull?
I wish I had that kind of pull, although I just had to buy a new, a used, basically. I bought a used 6 because I moved companies from one to the other, and they made me either have to buy a new phone or I bought a used one on Gazelle just so I'd, a few months from now, be able to upgrade for the 7 without having to have a plan that I had to fulfill.
Oh, and you're always saving money, John, so you bought a used phone.
That's what I'm trying to do, sir. I'm trying to be a prudent fiduciary.
I see. You know, I want to talk about, but so we're talking about phones when it comes to Apple. You know, the iPad came out, made a bit of a splash. I don't know how much of a factor that is now, but does Apple need to come up with a new product altogether? I mean, the car or whatever?
Well, they have been rumored to be working on the car. A lot of executives have been hired, and there's various patents that they've filed that indicate they're at least working on the electronics inside of a car, if not the car itself. I believe they'll come out with a car, and what better brand? I mean, people would have laughed about it, scoffed about it just, you know, a couple years ago, but now that Elon Musk has done it with no prior car experience and introduction of his models has been just screamingly successful, I think Apple looks at it and says, we can do that too.
Hey, you know what? I'm not a car guy at all, so I don't buy my car for the handling and all that stuff. I buy it for the cute stuff inside. And if it's going to be an Apple car on the inside with the technology and the computer and all of that, I think that'll sell cars. Speaking of cars, we had some sales numbers come out this right for April this morning. Light vehicles up 5%, which is on track for, are we looking at another good year for car sales in this country?
We are, but the profit margins are so razor thin that even good news out of, for instance, Ford and GM, like you say, with the light vehicle sales, they're each down about 1%. They're bouncing a little with the market here, but nonetheless, it seems like every bit of good news just gets sold in that sector. So I don't think that's over yet. I would still focus on the parts manufacturers like BorgWarner and Visteon or Delphi rather than the car makers themselves.
You know, we're sitting here in Chicago, and just a few feet away is the state of Indiana. They're voting in their presidential primary today. And Warren Buffett, who has been a Hillary Clinton supporter in the past, made some news this past week when he said that he doesn't think whoever the next president will be, that they will have a big impact on the U.S. economy long term. Now, you said before you think that probably Clinton is Wall Street's favorite, but what do you make of Buffett's comment?
I tend to agree. I think clearly Mr. Trump is an outsider with not a lot of friends in Washington, D.C., so tough to get things done there, especially if he's kind of used to bullying his way through things. And Hillary, I think, has almost as strong a disapproval ratings as does Mr. Trump. So I don't think either one will have a major economic impact. But I'd sure love to see both of them try to get along with Congress a little more. They need to be separated, of course, the three branches of government, and they were so by the founding fathers. But to the extent that the president and the Congress can get along better, I think we can pass some legislation instead of just leaving it all in the hands of the Fed.
So you don't think either will have a big impact because neither will have much power because they won't have a strong sort of popularity mandate?
That's what I think. Yes, sir.
Okay. I love this quote from Buffett, so I'm going to read it. For 240 years, it's been a terrible mistake to bet against America, and now is no time to start. So we'll see how that goes.
I agree with Mr. Buffett.
How is what's going on, and should we be worried or watching what's going on in Puerto Rico? I know they defaulted on a $400 million payment this past week. Is that something we should be concerned about?
We should, in particular, those in your audience that are trading bonds, obviously Puerto Rican bonds,
right,
should take note of that. However, with what Speaker Ryan is doing or trying to do in Congress and the fact that they are a protectorate of the U.S., I don't think they're going to let them fail. I don't think it's as bad as Argentina or Greece. But obviously, when you miss a bond payment and you have to basically restructure, somebody has to change their spending habits, unfortunately, just like we have to in this state, Stephen, because you either have to take more in or spend less. And the voters are going to decide probably about taking in more in both cases, Illinois and Puerto Rico, going forward.
All right, real quick, you got a stock tip for us today?
I'm buying STARS. This is, of course, the STRZA. It's the STARS and Encore networks on television.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen some pretty good institutional paper picking up in there. The stock is down about $8 or $10 from a recent high, and yet their subscriber numbers still look good, so we like buying it. We've been buying it for the last $2. Today it's only up about 12 cents, but that's against a negative market, so I like it.
Excellent. John Najarian, you can follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. Great to talk to you again today. Thanks very much.
It's always fun. Thank you, Steve.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman from DNA Info is in the studio. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve.
So we talk about openings and closings when you combine. Generally, it has to do with businesses.
Right.
Sometimes quirky businesses or old, long-standing businesses. This is a little unique, so tell me about the Edison Park Community Church, and sadly, not an opening.
Right. So they're on the northwest side at 6675 North Aikido. At least they were for 87 years. But the congregation there was getting smaller. They were getting down to about 30 people, and they had to make a decision. You know what? We have a building that's valuable and on property that's valuable. The congregation's shrinking. What should we do? And they came together and decided, let's just sell the building, and we'll find another smaller space that we can can gather in. And so they ended up selling the building. It was torn down. It's four single-family homes are being built there by a developer. But now these 30 people, because in the United Church of Christ, the congregation actually owns the building,
right.
These 30 people have three-quarters of $1 million.
So there was no hierarchy? There's no, I mean, it's...
Well, there's somebody that runs the congregation, but everything is voted on,
right.
And so, they decided to, why should we continue to struggle trying to maintain this building for 30 people, and we could probably take that money and use it for something better.
So we got 30 people, $750,000. That breaks down to, more than 50 grand a person. I'm not a big, so that's a nice little payoff.
Yeah, but they're not keeping it. They're not keeping it.
No. So it's kind of a nice thing. So they've gotten rid of this building. They can meet in a cafe or wherever, and they've got this big chunk of money that they're trying to help people with, right?
Right. So over the weekend, they gave $100,000 to the Chicago Food Depository. And they're going to give another $100,000 to the United Church of Christ's disaster relief effort. They're giving some money to a cancer hospice, $50,000 to PAWS, which is a no-kill shelter in Lincoln Park. And they're going to meet at a party room at a restaurant in Park Ridge.
Yeah, it's a nice thing. I mean, I'm sure it's bittersweet to see the church building go.
Yeah. I mean, it was around for nearly 100 years, and it was part of the neighborhood, but they made a decision, and they're going to get four new houses. And I guess the good thing is that the property is going to go back on the tax rolls, which they were, they didn't pay property
right.
taxes as churches. But, this is kind of an issue that we're seeing across the city now.
You were telling me that the Catholic Church plans to close as many as 100 churches in the next 20 years?
Yeah. And
in Chicago or in the archdiocese?
In their archdiocese, yeah. Which, of course, includes, Lake County suburban Cook County, but I got to figure that a lot of them are going to be in the city. And we see these churches, these empty churches all the time. And on DNA Info, we cover the neighborhoods. And so there's a lot of discussion as to how to redevelop them. Currently, there's 15 empty churches on the market right now.
Is that right?
You could buy a church yourself.
What would I do with it?
Well, a lot of people have great ideas about it, and then they figure out how much it's going to cost to actually develop them because they're old. They have old heating and cooling systems. They have structural problems. And so some people turn them into homes. Other people try to turn them into small businesses. But and the neighbors love it because it's part of the history of the neighborhood, but it's a very difficult thing to do, and so eventually some are demolished.
Right. All right, let's have a cookie while we're still here.
Okay, insomnia cookies.
Insomnia cookies. I've never heard of such a thing. This comes out of a student from Penn.
Yeah.
And it took off. He's got 87 stores mm-hmm. around the country, and the third one just opened in Chicago.
Right. This is in Wicker Park, 1537 North Milwaukee Avenue. There's already one in Lincoln Park and Rogers Park.
And the idea is it's these guys who have the munchies at 1 in the morning, and I don't know. I mean, never really had a hankering for a peanut butter cookie, but so they will deliver cookies until 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. So that's their whole business model. And as you say, it was started by this guy, Seth Berkowitz, when he was a Penn student, and he lived in a house with a bunch of guys, and he was just observing how they behaved, looking for a business opportunity, and said, people seem to like delivered food late at night. And so he started at Penn and then expanded to Temple and Drexel, also in Philadelphia,
right.
Graduated and just started opening them up in various college towns. And once he covered that market, then he started opening them up in big cities like Chicago.
I think the Rogers Park, right, Lincoln Park, and Elwicker Park.
Mm-hmm.
You get a six-pack of cookies for $9. Not bad.
Right.
Maybe I'll treat next week.
Hey, 50 for 64. 50 you might want to go
for
that
64.
Route.
More yeah. math. All right. Yes. Andrew Herman, you can read. Where do we read these stories?
DNAinfo.com/Chicago.
Nice to see you. We'll see you again soon.
All right.
This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Business Lunch, the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Suzanne Mushin is in the studio. She's the co-host for The Big Payoff. You can listen to that at WGNplus.com. And Susan, I feel like...
I really feel like this segment
Well,
be
I just
better.
Want to understand. I feel like... Okay, so we're riffing off a New York Times piece that says that saying I feel like is a terrible way to communicate.
It's a terrible way.
I don't
way.
Get that at all. I think
What do you feel like? Go ahead and tell me what you feel like.
I feel like when you say that, you are distilling the your individual approach to a situation. So, Suzanne, I feel like we really need to move this way. I don't know. That to me, that introduces genuineness.
And I think you're giving up your power. It gives you an out. As long as you feel like something and you don't know it or believe it or just say it,
right,
you're giving me an out because now I have to debate your feelings.
Well, that's what they're saying, and it's an unfair sort of debating position because it doesn't come with logic. If it's my feeling, if I feel like it,
yes,
I don't have to defend my feeling.
It's subjective.
With fact, right.
And I brought this to our attention and to our listeners' attention because it is a millennialism. It is a little more prominent in women. I have to say, I hear it all the time.
Well, I think it came out of like, you know, this sort of couples communication and things like that.
Could be, yeah.
I feel, you know, so when I'm having a discussion with someone and I want to persuade them or understand them, the facts aren't always as important as the emotion behind it. I feel like. So if I'm having a debate with someone and they give me that, to me, that gives me more information and a little more power.
Here's the key word. You think the key word is feel. It's feel like. It's the like that takes away the power. If you feel something, just tell me. Just say, I feel blank.
Right.
But when you say, I feel like, you've all of a sudden set up a very soft, a very weak position, and it puts me in a position where I'm automatically feeling like I don't want to hurt his feelings.
So if I say, going to dinner with that couple is a waste of time.
Love it.
I feel like we can spend our time a little better.
See the difference?
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. So we should ban I feel like.
Ban, especially for women. I think women come into a lot of conversations already with the upspeak, and I can't even do the upspeak anymore.
Oh, yes,
I've
you can.
Mocked well, it so many. Okay, so, here I go. I feel like this is a really bad way to talk.
Well, here's the thing. When I picture myself, and this is me saying I feel like, I think of, you know, a scene. It's either a woman.
Yes.
Or it's a very emotional guy.
You're a metro
right?
guy.
Right. It was really right. a metro guy. He's uh-huh. really in trouble. Honey, I feel like. Okay.
Right.
So we got that. We can't say that phrase another time.
Right.
So let's say meternity. This
Can
is
you
a
imagine?
Great story.
This is so fantastic. It's just so delicious, this story. So a woman who was a editor at Redbox magazine and 17 magazine.
Red Book magazine.
Oh, Red Book. Sorry,
yeah.
Did I say Red Box?
You
that's
did.
Like the,
I know.
That's like the
but Red
CDs
Book, it's a woman's
whatever.
Magazine.
Woman's magazine, so she should have known better. Writes a book that's fiction, but then she ends up positioning it in the press as if this is a thing. And the thing we're talking about is this concept that she coins, a meternity leave.
Was that the name of the book?
No, it wasn't the name of the book, but in the book, the character asks for and fakes a pregnancy, actually, in order to get time off of work. That's the premise of the book. But then this concept ends up going out, and you should see the debate flying. So the idea is...
Let me say it.
Go ahead.
So the woman's name is Megan Foy.
Right, we might as well just out her right now.
Well, you know, and she's defended herself. She's in this article in the Huffington Post said she made the disastrous mistake of linking this concept of maternity leave, telling the New York Post last week that she wanted all of the perks
yes.
of the maternity leave without the baby.
Right. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, look, anybody who's either been a mother, been a father, we all know what a maternity leave really is like, which is the opposite
tough.
Of me time. It was just so great. And I think that there is such a lack of consciousness. And now in this world of PC where, look, if she gets a maternity leave, maybe I should have one, too.
It's
Come
only fair.
On.
It's not. It's unfair if
unfair.
Unbirthing women don't get maternity leaves or meternity leaves.
It is a great name. The Meternity.
The Meternity,
leave.
Is
yeah.
it, you think?
Oh, yeah.
Don't
it's
they usually,
brand.
Don't the adults call it a sabbatical?
Exactly, right.
And which does exist. I mean, not just
sure.
in academia. There are a lot of companies who do that.
REI is well known for it.
The REI is well known for a lot of things
yeah,
they
a lot
do,
of
right?
Things.
So that's the idea of it, though. You know, I need a little time to recharge. A little me time.
A little me time.
A little Meternity. Mm-hmm. So would you go up to your boss and say, I'm thinking I'm going to have my Meternity is going to kick in
No, you know what I'd
June?
Say? I'd say, I feel like a maternity leave. Right.
So that's check that out. Meternity leave.
Uh-huh. So go ask your boss for one. Let's see how that goes over. Everybody.
I think she's on to something worthwhile. She just did it Very badly, could right? Be. So what's the worst thing for you when you're on an airplane? Is it the crowded seats? Is it the bad food? Is it the... maybe the baby crying?
It's a killer when the baby's in the middle seat. If you've got an aisle and you're stoked and then a mother and the lap baby come by, that's not a good feeling.
No, I know, but...
In either situation,
it's much worse. I think it's much worse for the mom or the dad.
Who's carrying the baby,
right.
No doubt.
Right.
Yeah.
It's brutal. And, you know, it's one of those... I'm a very tall guy, right? So when I go to a movie theater, this is really far afield, but when I go to a movie theater and I try not to sit directly in front of someone, if I do, I can hear them. You know?
Yeah.
It's like it's allowed for them to be rude and mean to me because I'm tall and I sit in front of them.
Right.
I say that because it's sort of like a mom or a dad carrying a baby. People look at the kid.
Yes.
As if it's the plague.
Right.
So JetBlue has kind of a cool... I was just wanting to explain what JetBlue is going to do with this.
So JetBlue did this promotion, and it's, I believe, one of these ad agency-type stunts. I mean, it was set up that people clearly knew they were being filmed. But let's just talk about the concept, where they told the passengers on the plane that whenever a baby on the plane cried, they would get 25% off the flight. And so one time would be 25%. If a second baby cried, it's 50%. By the time four babies cry, you get a free flight. So the passenger started applauding then every time a baby
which
would
is
cry.
Why I tweeted out that you were going to pinch babies on your
right,
next
flight. I was troubled by that. Yeah. But look. It was clever. I was shocked, actually, at the number of women who were posting this on Facebook and saying what a great idea this was.
Don't you think it is?
I think it's so stupid. There's no amount of money that would actually make up for a shrieking baby next to me for 4 hours.
Oh, come on.
No.
If you're flying to New York.
No.
And if it's 4 hours, it's a long flight to New York. But you're going to New York, and there's a crying baby next to you, and you land, and they say...
Nope.
They say you get a free flight?
I mean, I'd be happy, but it really wouldn't have made up for the fact that I sat on that plane.
You're one of those people. You're one of those eye rollers.
Here's what I love. Right. If you watch the commercial, which we should
post. Think I sat in front of you at a movie once.
Okay, that's not nice. I'm all of 5'1". Right. I would have probably seen over your shoulder. You should post it. And I just want you to watch. There are a couple of guys in this video who clearly aren't aware they're being filmed, who really aren't happy these babies are crying.
Really? So you think, because when I watched it, I thought the whole thing was staged. You think it was a real flight?
I think it was a real flight. Yeah.
All right. I will post it and put it up right after the show.
Yeah.
Suzanne Muchin from The Big Payoff at WGM Plus. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Steve.
WGMplus.com. By the way, we're going to take a break. And Philip Weiss will be here, you know, Seyfarth Shaw at work. And he's going to talk about the perils of Mother's Day in the office. Be careful what you give there. Thank you, Orion. It's 12:52. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WG on a Tuesday afternoon. Philip Weiss is in the studio. He is the principal behind Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Philip, how did I do?
Really well.
Okay, good.
Perfect.
I always have a hard time with that. Welcome back to the program. I appreciate it.
Good to see you.
And so, you know, we talk from time to time about, you know, you advise different businesses how to stay out of legal trouble
right.
with their workers. And from time to time, from my standpoint, it seems a little silly, right? Like no bobbing for apples at the Halloween party.
I got that sense
because
from you.
Because of the disaster that could happen. But so Mother's Day's around the corner. And, you know, it seems to me like that might be an especially sensitive area because, you know, there are women who are mothers, there are women who aren't mothers, there are women who don't want to be mothers, there are women who do.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it's sort of perilous.
It is. And if we were talking 20 years ago, we probably wouldn't even have this discussion. So the whole area of mothers at work and liability is really a new phenomenon. In fact, over the last 10 to 15 years, Steve, the cases have really skyrocketed, almost 400%.
It's an all-time high.
Yeah, related to how you talk to mothers at work, as well as how you treat mothers at work, and non-mothers, for that matter.
Right. So give me an example. I mean, what's something that people get in trouble? I mean, I'm thinking breastfeeding, right? That's the obvious one that's in the news.
That's a big one.
But I would imagine there are a lot of more subtle ones as
well.
There
are. And that's a really great point, because when it comes to something like gender, we all know, or we hope we know, that a comment, "I'm not going to hire women," is going to be a problem in
bad
court.
Bad thing, yes.
So at least you and I agree on that.
Right, right.
What's happened, though, is the comments that end up in these working mom cases are more subtle. such as, can you really handle the work here with three kids?
Right.
So it's a question of ability. Or my wife would never put our kids in daycare. And they turn into zombies in daycare.
Now, I can see where that's bad. That's a bad thing because you're judging the person. If you're bringing someone in and they have a big burden somewhere else, yeah. You know, maybe they're the president of the International Stamp Club or something.
Right.
It seems to be not an unfair question to say, are you going to have the time to allow the resources to this job?
Yeah. Well, the way you frame that, actually, is virtually what we might tell a client. But what you've done, and maybe it's just because you've talked before and you're getting
you've
safer.
You've broken me, yeah.
Yeah, is you're avoiding reference to, are there family obligations?
Yeah.
Are there child care obligations? Because what the courts have told us in Illinois and beyond is you got to focus on the job requirements. And that applies to when someone is hired as well. A lot of these cases driven by moms at work come from the fact that a manager takes aside all the working moms and says, we got a really tough schedule. We got multiple deadlines. I'm here for you as working moms. What do we need to do for you? As opposed to avoiding the assumption that they need the help and just talking to everybody on the team.
I would imagine it is indefensible to not hire a woman with 10 kids because you fear they can't do the job for you.
That is exactly right. Because there have been so many stories and cases where an employee worked harder, stayed longer, and was more committed with the kind of family or other obligations that would have given a manager who wasn't thinking this way real pause. So absolutely, you want to think beyond what you expect. I mean, the Leave It to Beaver age is ancient history.
Right.
So our assumptions about what makes a good worker or a perfect family are long gone.
And moms win in court.
Moms win in court at an alarming or maybe understandable rate. And that's for three reasons, Steve. On the one hand, women, working moms, are more willing to talk about these issues, the discrimination. We see that in exit interviews when they leave, and we certainly see it in court. Juries are more sympathetic because they're hearing a lot of these stories for the first time, and you get all this testimony, such as, you know what, you're probably not up for this task. We'll give it to you in 3 years when you come back after the kids are in school.
Right. That'd be a bad thing, Philip.
Bad thing.
You taught me I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to come back here.
But, I sometimes have sympathy for the old-time boss who's like, well, okay, I'm going to do something nice for all the moms this year. I'm going to take all the moms in the office and give them brunch on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And that's a bad thing, too.
Well, theoretically, it's bad. We don't see a ton of high-dollar sign cases for a brunch. But when you think about it, if you're giving one group an advantage, whatever that is, you are raising a risk. We have seen real cases, by the way, when the Friday before Mother's Day was a day off given to all working moms in the workplace, because courts look at working moms and look at moms and look at women as one big bucket.
Well, I would hope they look at men that way, too.
They do.
Yeah.
But we don't seem to see a lot of companies giving Father's Day off for the fathers for some interesting reason. So the cases tend to go in one direction because that's the pattern.
All the women in my life, I can hear them right now. They're saying every day is Father's Day.
Yeah, I've heard that at least once.
Which isn't true. Philip Weiss from Seifarth Shaw at Work. Thanks for coming by. I hope to talk to you again soon.
Good to see you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.